right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. Yay, it's Friday, January 30th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. How's everybody doing on this Friday morning? I'm so happy it's Friday. You just don't even know. I just checked the weather. Actually, we had a little bit of a snowstorm yesterday. Not much, a couple inches, but it's about 20 degrees and light snow here in upstate New York. Yes, it's about the same every day. I believe the low tonight is going to be 4 degrees. Oh, I can't wait for spring. I'm sure many of you feel exactly the same way. I saw there's another storm coming in by this weekend. I've had enough of snow. I'm getting ready for some vitamin D dosages. Speaking of vitamin D, by the way, let's talk about our immune systems. Over the last couple of days, probably over the last week, actually, we've been talking about precision healthcare, Obama's State of the Union announcing that that's going to be like the new biggest thing. We connected some dots also toward the end of the show yesterday where we found the proof to show that Sibelius, I wanted to see what happened to Sibelius. She got chucked out, but I don't know who took her place. Sibelius, the one who was in charge of the Obamacare website that was such a travesty, had put through an announcement stating that insurance offered through the Affordable Care Act does not constitute federal healthcare programs, which means that it is not covered by federal anti-kickback statutes. We kind of took a look at how that is possible. I mean, why people aren't standing up on the roofs of all of the buildings in Washington screaming that kickbacks and bribes are, I mean, I just don't even see how this is possible and why nobody is making that the key central point to the repeal of this whole disaster of a healthcare plan. But the plan is much bigger than that. At the very end of the show yesterday, we dug into the real reasons behind it. And I want to get back there and then continue on because I have so much other stuff to attach to this. But one of the things we found out is that that announcement about Obamacare not being a health program and not covered under the anti-kickback statutes, that came out in November of 2013. And shortly thereafter, I believe it was January of 2014, there was a story that came out in Forbes magazine that had said, oh, the poor pharmaceutical companies, they had cut their R&D budgets, and oh, that is how they compete. And remember, we've been saying all along that you are the R&D line item budget. I mean, that's the way I've always postulated is that you have now become the research and development. They will no longer have to put that money into their budget, in which case it'll make them more profitable. As this precision healthcare comes online, your electronic medical health records come online, HIPAA goes away, and you give the medical establishment your swab. The medical establishment that is part of precision healthcare will be working together with your doctors, geneticists, venture capitalists, the FDA, and all these other groups that, of course, wink, want to make sure that your health care is premium and that you're healthy. You know, all of a sudden it makes a lot of sense. So let's get in. The last thing we read yesterday was pharma R&D cuts, this is by Forbes, hurting the U.S. competitive standing. And they were saying, oh, unless, you know, the government steps in, we don't know how we're going to compete. Maybe the National Institute of Health will give us some money to help us with this initiative. And lo and behold, this whole Obamacare precision healthcare initiative gets rolled out, and they basically gave away the rest of the store to these people. So here's the other story that I had found. And this one now, this follows along. This is at the end of 2014. Hold on, I gotta turn my heater on. It's cold out here. There we go. Beep. New numbers. Pharma does spend more on marketing than R&D. So now we discover that all those R&D dollars that they're no longer spending to be competitive. And, Wall Street had told them, don't spend almost 50% of your earnings on R&D because the rest of the world doesn't. And we found out from April Inverstein's interview with, and I don't remember the woman's name. I apologize if she ever happens to be listening, but she was the one who wrote the book of Tales of the Big Pharma Drug Pusher or something was the name of it. She had been in for 25 years selling pharmaceuticals and wrote a tell-all book. One of the things that we discovered from her is that the testing is on the low end, and they just set aside money to cover settlements for any injuries because profit is so huge with these drugs. Well, if you get rid of that R&D line item now and we make just all of the American public the big fat guinea pigs, guess what? You can spend more on marketing. And with marketing comes more money. And one of the things that we know in the United States that it isn't legal in most of the other countries in the world is that in the United States, a few years back, they did pass a rule that allowed pharmaceutical companies to market directly to the end user, which is why we see commercials all day, every day for all the newest drugs that you want to go ask your doctor about. And remember, too, now with Obamacare, with kickbacks being legal, your doctor could be wined and dined by Pfizer and AstraZeneca, and they could be offered trips to Hawaii if they sell 1,000 units or whatever. I mean, I don't know who in their right mind would be trusting doctors these days. I mean, I've had, like I told you guys, I've had a few that were awesome doctors, and guess what? They're not doctors anymore because they saw what was happening in the system. It isn't about treating people anymore. It isn't about being a humanitarian and caring about if someone is well. It's about finding a way to push some sort of pharmaceutical to treat the symptoms, but never getting to what the actual problems are. And when we've dug down into it, we all know that it is the poison that they're putting into our environment, into our foods. I mean, absolutely 100%. Every single day, there are more studies coming out about glyphosate, aka Roundup. And remember, that got a big fat rubber stamp by the FDA with Michael Taylor. There are ingredients that are put into your food, and maybe today we can actually get to the nanotechnology that's been in our food for the last 15 years, and whoops, they didn't tell us. And kind of connect some of that to the health problems that are going on. All right, let's get to this. Pharma does spend more money on marketing than they do on R&D. This is out of an industry publication called Fierce Pharma from November 6, 2014. One of the most persistent memes around the drug industry is the contention that pharma spends more on marketing than on R&D. Typically, when enterprising folks try to prove that the assertion that they spend more on marketing, they compare the SG&A spending to R&D budgets. Of course, SG&A, which I'm not really sure what that is, but we'll just read this anyway, includes general and administrative expenses, not just sales and marketing expenses. So these comparisons are easy to critique. But now the BBC has some numbers on marketing spending in particular. Sourced from Global Data, they now show that 9 out of 10 big pharma companies do, in fact, spend more on marketing than they do on R&D. And in some cases, it's almost twice as much. We'll definitely take a closer look at this. But remember, like I said, most of these big pharma companies are publicly traded entities. And when you're on the stock market, your biggest consumer is your investor, and that's all you care about is making profit for the investors. Otherwise, they sell your stock and they move on to somebody else, and then your stock price tumbles, and every one of the executive management that has 100,000 shares in stock that they're waiting to sell because they got it for free or at half price or whatever isn't going to make their $10 million in income because the stock price fell. So it is in their best interest to make sure that the stockholder is the A number one importance in making sure that earnings are up. All right. It says, we will identify the minority party first. It's Roche, the $50 billion Swiss drug maker. According to Global Data, Roche spent 9.3. Now, remember I told you guys that R&D line items on the budget were massive? And if they made that zero and turned the American public through this precision healthcare, through the electronic medical health records, using genomics, if they turned us and getting rid of HIPAA laws for privacy, if they turned us into the petri dish where they were able to use our data freely, that R&D line item budget going to zero would be a massive savings. Well, check it out. Roche spent $9.3 billion with a B on R&D last year. So that was in 2013. $300 million more than it actually earmarked for marketing. So, hey, Roche actually spent more on R&D than they did on marketing. And Roche's R&D budget is actually the second largest in the whole group that we looked at. As for the rest, the biggest marketing premium belonged to Johnson & Johnson, with $17.5 billion spent in marketing, which is more than double. It's $8.2 billion in R&D. Those are massive numbers, people. Could you imagine saving $8.2 billion because now you didn't have to blow all that money on R&D because now it was all available as software as a service through these electronic records with the majority of the American public all bagged and tagged in that database? And you just pay $39.95 a month for access. Johnson & Johnson is a big consumer division with store shelves like products for baby shampoos and dental floss, which could skew the numbers toward marketing. But I'll tell you what, as a parent and anyone who has been a new parent over the last 10 years or so, if you've been inquisitive like me and started digging into the chemicals in the products that you were putting onto your baby, you discovered that in things such as the baby lotions or the baby shampoos, they had hormone disruptors in there. That shit's not safe to put on your kid. Look into it. Trust me. I could not believe, I mean, that would be the one name in the industry that I would say, yes, they've been doing this for 50 years. They should know better than anyone. And I was just absolutely floored at all of the chemicals that are in their baby products. It's disgusting. And like I said, we're going to take a look at some of the products that are poisoning us every day. The next one in line is Pfizer, long known for its marketing muscle. The drug maker plowed $11.4 billion into marketing in 2013, $4.8 billion more than it spent on R&D, a difference of 72%. AstraZeneca is close behind with a 70% difference. The UK-based company put $7.3 billion in marketing and only $4.3 billion into R&D. Remember, AstraZeneca is related to Syngenta, and all those guys from Oxitec with the genetically modified mosquitoes came from there. AstraZeneca has been pumping up marketing behind its products, such as their blood thinner, Brilinta, as it preps for the onslaught of Nexium copycats. The next five range from a 47% difference in favor of R&D on the high end. Novartis with $14.6 billion in marketing. The latter is Merck with $9.5 billion in marketing and only $7.5 billion in R&D. Then there's Eli Lilly with a pittance of $200 million spent on marketing. Its marketing spending, what This doesn't make sense. Hold on. It's Eli Lilly with a mere $200 million premium to the marketing side. Oh, gotcha. They spent $200 million over what they spent on R&D. So they spent $5.7 billion on marketing and $5.5 billion on R&D. Over the past several years, Big Pharma has been catching a lot of flack for unproductive research and development. Major drug makers have restructured their R&D operations, cutting jobs, jettisoning programs, and consolidating their labs. The aim? To make R&D more nimble and more productive with a better return on investment than the industry has delivered in previous years. Guys, I'm telling you, this precision healthcare is the answer to it all. And the reason that all these insurance companies dumped subscribers and jumped on the Obamacare wagon was because they're all going to be making bank. All of them. They're going to be making more money. They're going to have everyone in a database. R&D is going to be software as a service. And you and me and our children and the environment are all going to be the big fat petri dish. Companies have also been cutting their marketing expenses. Sales forces around the world have shrunk by thousands as drug makers slash cost to prepare for the patent cliff. And that's patenting where they only get to hold a patent for 20 years before the generic drug companies get to pick it up. The industry's move towards specialty meds, and that's where precision healthcare comes in, has also prompted cuts. With more tightly focused drugs requiring fewer reps on the ground. And remember, in the United States, they can market directly to the end user, like I said. And if your doctor's getting kickbacks because Obamacare is not covered under any of the anti-kickback laws, hey, your doctor's going to be doing the sales rep's job. It's worth noting that one lone standout, Roche, is among the more specialized company with the biggest guns in oncology, plus infectious disease and immunology. One of its drugs are mass marketed products. It's near the bottom of the list when it comes to ad spending. Pfizer and AstraZeneca, on the other hand, have broad ranges of drugs targeted to the large populations, and they also work on genetically modified seeds. I'm not sure about Pfizer, but AstraZeneca most certainly being related to Syngenta. So I just wanted you to hear the numbers for research and development because it is absolutely insane. I needed to illustrate to you that this ability to get rid of that line item budget is a huge bonus to the market, and it absolutely 100% puts into focus why they would want to get on this big everybody making money bandwagon. Now, I ran across, well, actually here, we're going to go back to a few things that I mentioned yesterday that we never got to, and that is this big anti-vaxxer movement that now is getting pressed because of Disneyland having having mumps, a big mumps outbreak, and they're now jumping all over that saying it's the anti-vaxxer's fault. Look at you stupid parents. And like I told you yesterday, what this is going to lead to, again, is more divide and conquer. And actually, I think I even heard Hal say that this past Sunday. Divide and conquer. It's going to get parents fighting amongst each other. And anyone who's ever had a child knows that you would do anything for that child. So if they're telling you in the general mass media that it's those anti-vaxxer parents that is going to be threatening your child, you're going to go after those anti-vaxxers with tooth and nail. Okay. So who do we have pop out of the woodwork to back it all up but good old Melinda Gates? Melinda Gates comes out a few days ago and speaks out against the anti-vaccine movement. Oh, wasn't this just anticipated? Absolutely. Expanding the accessibility of vaccines throughout the developing world has been one of the goals of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We even looked at a whole bunch of stuff by them. I mean, we know that has been Bill Gates's big push since he got out of full-time running Microsoft. Although the controversial anti-vaccine movement has called for the end of the practice, co-chair Melinda Gates is firmly standing by the treatment. In an interview with Huffington Post on Wednesday, Gates touted, and this is Melinda, not Bill, the importance of vaccines in combating conditions like pneumonia and diarrhea, and responded to the anti-vaxxers who have questioned their effectiveness. Now, something that I want to bring out here quickly is notice that they mentioned vaccines for combating pneumonia. Now, one thing that we need to remember is that back in July, and actually Pigmine dropped that to me a few months ago, back in July, there was an executive action, and I had read it to you guys, that Obama had passed. Actually, it was an executive order, not an action. And it was during the Ebola outbreak that he found this. It was July 14th, I believe, was the date of the executive order. You could probably find that on whitehouse.gov. They had expanded the list of quarantinable diseases to include pneumonia and anything that could be spread easily within the population to be able to be quarantined. And we remember way back when we looked at the civilian internee manual that has been published, and I'm sure it's still out there on intelligence.net, that it talked about forced vaccinations while being in some sort of like disaster camp, let's say. They had talked about you being the danger to the larger population, especially if you were in containment. So don't think that this is all accidental, okay? Because it's not. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, and maybe I can scroll down here really quick. There was a story that popped up here the other day. Here it is. That made me think of that executive order that actually mentioned pneumonia. White House wants $1.2 billion to fight antibiotic-resistant bacteria looming superbug epidemic. There was another executive order that had come out right at the very same time that it talked about the need, and the CDC's all on board, the need for us now to start dumping all this money into these resistant strains of things that, of course, are popping up everywhere because we overused antibiotics. And, you know, I mean, there have been lots of studies about, you know, mass radiation in the environment causing mutations in viruses and bacteria as well. And they're finding all kinds of crazy stuff going on now. I mean, don't think it's an accident that there are dead, all kinds of dead creatures all over the Pacific Northwest, and they're not really sure what's going on. Maybe it's not directly the radiation, but I'll tell you what, like especially the sea stars, all those sea star deaths, and they're like, oh, it's some sort of, you know, I don't even know what they're calling it, if it's a bacteria or a viral disease. But don't think that that doesn't have anything to do with some sort of mutation from the large amounts of radiation in the ocean, because I could pretty much guarantee you it does. So let me just read a little bit of this, and then we're going to bounce back to Melinda Gates. So this is the White House wants $1.2 billion now to keep you and me safe from the looming superbug epidemic that, of course, they're going to have to save us from. The White House has called for increased investment to fight antibiotic-resistant bacteria to prevent resurgent diseases. Of course, once thought eradicated, and new superbugs that similarly gain strength thanks to modern penchants for profligate antibiotic use. President Obama will ask U.S. Congress to nearly double the funding that combats antibiotic resistance to $1.2 billion. The White House announced on Tuesday, calling the matter, quote, one of the most pressing public health issues facing the world today, unquote. How about that? One in five of your children in this country are living under the poverty level. You don't think that that's one of the most pressing public health issues facing the world today? Because I do. This announcement was a follow-up to the executive order. That's what I told you. The president signed in September, and this one was September, the other one was in July, that launched efforts against antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And we read both of those executive orders. Again, I told you you can find those on whitehouse.gov. The proposal called for funding research into new antibiotics, increased monitoring. Yes, we got to love increased monitoring. And remember, there's that brand new big fat CDC database that they're using right now to monitor which healthcare workers have gotten their vaccines. It'll also be tied into the electronic medical health records we read. The increased monitoring of infection outbreaks, the new resistance efforts. Oh, yeah, we got to talk about this. The new resistance efforts at veteran and military hospitals and efforts to curb antibiotic overprescription. One of the things that I wanted to dig into, and I did not find the video yet, but I wanted to, was how the Veterans Administration, the VA hospitals, all jumped onto the Watson bandwagon. We talked about IBM Watson's cognitive computing platform that they are now rolling out as part of the Precision Healthcare Plan for Obamacare users. Well, it also has been rolled out for our veterans so it can make decisions without emotion as to who lives and who dies. You know that's coming. Especially when you look at everything that's happened up until now with the VA administration. It's just, to me, I just can't even get over how far we've come and people still don't see it. Countering antibiotic resistance currently costs the American healthcare system between $21 billion and $34 billion each and every year, according to the Infectious Disease Society of America. Hey, what about colloidal silver? That seems to work pretty well on MRSA, which doesn't have any antibiotic that'll kill it. I just saw, actually, there were a couple more, and they just came out. I posted a story about a week ago about some new thing that they came out that kills all kinds of crazy antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And we also discovered, back during the quote-unquote Ebola epidemic, that using ultraviolet light, and they were coming out with that Ebola robot, remember that? Where they would like pulse ultraviolet light in the hospital rooms and it would kill MRSA and Ebola. So I don't know what they're talking about here, $1.2 billion. Why don't they start looking into the technology that's already out there that's been shown to kill stuff? Another big sucking sound now using, like I said, the medical industrial complex to take it all out of us. Quote, antibiotic resistance limits our ability to perform a range of modern medical procedures from joint replacements to organ transplants, the safety of which depends on our ability to treat bacterial infections that can arise as post-surgical complications, the White House said. Yeah, you know where you're going to get those infections? It's in the freaking hospital. I got MRSA after I gave birth and was in the hospital for 9 days and caught an infection. You know, one of the things about that Ebola robot is that they were talking about using it within the entire hospital to super cleanse. So I don't say, why don't you give that $1.2 billion, like I said, to help rebuild our infrastructure and help get jobs working? Oh, but it is going to get jobs working in big pharma. According to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, more than 23,000 Americans die every year from infections that can overpower top shelf antibiotics. Well, in the grand scheme of things, 23,000 is not a very large number. And maybe if they started using some of the treatments that we already know, like I said, like colloidal silver, ultraviolet light, and some of these other new emerging drugs and treatments that they have, maybe they could save some of those people. What I would be more worried about are these flesh-eating bacterias or the brain-eating amoebas now. Did you see that? They now have proven that there was a kid, I think he was in Louisiana. They finally came to the decision, and there have been a few cases. We saw one last year about a man who died. He had a sore on his leg and he went into the water off the coast of Florida and he got one of those brain-eating amoebas, I believe. Or maybe it was one of the flesh-eating. I don't remember. I was very surprised that it had lived in salt water, but absolutely it can live in salt water too, and he died from it. But they just proved that this kid from last year, I don't know if they did, you know, additional autopsy tests or whatever, but they had proved that the kid had gotten the water from tap water, and it had gotten up his nose while he was using a slip and slide, and he died from this brain-eating amoeba. He was 5 or 11, maybe. But I'd be more concerned about shit like that. Brain-eating amoebas? I mean, that to me sounds, again, we need to one of these days get back to the connection between mad cow disease, CVGID, chronic wasting disease, and Alzheimer's, because they found a connection to that as well. Those malformed proteins, prions. You know, that stuff is pretty scary. Because I've never seen any explanation as to where that stuff has come from. And I really think that that's like genie out of the bottle stuff that got out from places like Plum Island or who knows where. I mean, down south, I would say probably someplace like Texas A&M where they do Frankenstein DARPA finance science. Quote, judicious use of antibiotics is essential to slow the emergence of antibiotic resistance in bacteria and extend the useful lifetime of effective antibiotics. And remember, not just antibiotic use. And they did. I have to say, they overprescribed antibiotic use for years. I was one of the guinea pigs to that. I mean, they would give me antibiotics for everything. And then I got so sick. And who knows if it was the killing of the gut flora, which antibiotics tends to do. We didn't know about replenishing our gut flora with probiotics in those days. Or if it was the GMO. Or if it was the nanotech in our food. Could have been a combination of all of those things. I just know that it brought my immune system down to zero. And it made me a very sick puppy. But when they start like pulling back the reins on those things, so we're not going to give you antibiotics. We're going to let you be sick for a while. We're going to let it pummel your immune system. We're going to let you now try to fight that infection, even though you don't have much of an immune system left because of the assault from everything in our outside environment. Also, pain-killing drugs. Did you notice like something like codeine? Codeine that used to be very easy to get, codeine that I don't know if it was really habit forming, maybe it was, but I'll tell you what, for anyone who used to get any type of bronchial issues, bronchitis or sinus infections, that codeine cough medicine was like a godsend. It used to quiet your cough, help you get that shit out of your lungs. It was a good expectorant. And it kind of chilled you right out, made you all warm and happy, and got rid of any pain that you were feeling. And it was a short-term thing. You cannot buy that stuff anymore. I spent, when I had that flu thing that went on for a month that I, thank God, I'm finally over. And by the way, my kitty cat finally is all better. She had never been sick before, so she was such a little baby over it. But she's much better. I was very worried about her for a while. But, I mean, that was such a horrible, horrible upper respiratory. And I looked everywhere online to see if I could get my hands on some of that purple codeine cough medicine. And the only places that you could find was in the UK, which they still sell it over the counter like they used to. I think here you might have needed a prescription, but still, your doctors would prescribe it. You can't get it now. And I am sure that I probably ended up on some, you know, drug enforcement freaking search list now because I spent an entire evening trying to find out how to get my hands on that stuff. But as they like reel back now some of these treatments that we used to take for granted in the pharmaceutical world, things that used to work if you used them within reason and didn't overprescribe like they did, you're now going to see that this is going to be a have and a have nots, right? If you got the money, you can get it. If you don't have the money, then you know what? You're going to be in pain. You're going to be sick. Well, you know, let's try something else because we don't like to prescribe antibiotics. You, again, are becoming the guinea pig. The increased spending, this $1.2 billion, is going to go to, of course, again, the ones that are involved in everything, the National Institute of Health and the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority. Do you guys see how all this money is being redirected into these high-tech medical industries that are going to be the death of us all? I'm not against coming up with new and novel ways to treat things, but I'm telling you, I see the writing on the wall. This is not for your benefit or for mine. The end result of all this precision healthcare, and we're going to scroll back and actually look at the dollars and cents of this all, and you will very quickly see that even though they paint this a rosy picture to get everybody on board, it's just to make you and me the guinea pig. The end result of all this longevity, immortality project, consumer-based, personalized medicine to cure all disease is not for the middle class that doesn't exist anymore. It's for the 80 rich people that have as much wealth as 3.2 billion other people on this planet. You and I will be generation one where they make the mistakes, where you grow the arm out of your forehead, where your kid ends up autistic along with the 50% of the others in the population by 2050 or 2030, whatever that MIT study showed. That's where that prediction comes from. Okay, here's a quote from the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Quote, if we continue along the line of more and more microbes becoming antibiotic resistant, we could be faced with a situation where we have untreatable infections. Oh, God forbid. Because you know what? Biopharma is going to then have to put more money into their research and development in coming up with RNAi vaccines, right? Talk about setting back the clock, he says. That is just bad news. In December, a study known as the Review into Antimicrobial Resistance warned that superbugs with a high resistance to antibiotics could kill 10 million people worldwide by 2050 unless more action is taken. The figure is higher than the global impact of cancer, which currently kills 8.2 million. Microbial resistance will impact poorer nations the most, the study reaffirmed. Last fall, Obama's executive order established steps that the U.S. would take to combat antibiotic resistance. The order set aside $800 million in extra funding for companies to develop new drugs. Yes. So we are going to be funding research and development. Remember, we looked at that. As well as $900 million for further research. Yes, let's give it to these poor big pharma companies who aren't making any profits. Boo-hoo. I mean, I just can't even get over that we're funding this shit. And you know why we're funding this shit? Because they don't spend money unless they know they're going to make money. And so we have to make it an emergency, right? Isn't that the way it works? Like I've said a million times already, that's where the whole quote unquote Ebola emergency came from. It was the catalyst that lit the fire under big pharma now being the savior to us all. Remember, we have to feel a threat for them to then step in and make us feel safe. Problem, reaction, solution. The plan also prohibits farmers from employing antibiotics on livestock for growth purposes, but critics say it does not go nearly as far as it needs to. Now, that was the one big thing when that executive order went through, all the truthers jumped on board and they said, yay, they can't be injecting now wantonly antibiotics into animals. But and I don't remember the exact wording of it all, but it really didn't cover too much of anything. You're still going to be able to put antibiotics in animals. In 2011, the Food and Drug Administration, of course, yes, we trust the FDA too, confirmed that 80% of all antibiotics used in the United States is dedicated to animal agriculture. And you know the one thing that this bill did? You used to be able to get fish antibiotics on Amazon.com. And for anyone that is a prepper, you know that if you look into many of those fish antibiotics and you flip the bottle over, they're actually pharmaceutical grade antibiotics, and you could get them without a prescription. So if you're ever trying to like fill up your stash for SHTF, you could get things as such as amoxicillin, penicillin, cephalosporin. I mean, there's a whole list. There actually are still some places, and I'm not sure how they're doing it, that are selling fish antibiotics out there. And I mean, they're pretty inexpensive if you look at the grand scheme of things, maybe $30 a bottle for 60. And anyone who was ever into any type of post-apocalyptic stories, I mean, you could make it through hell or high water. You cut your finger and you get an infection and end up with sepsis. The game's over. So it is pretty important. Even though you don't want to overuse antibiotics, you better have some way to treat an infection if there is no medical care. But by passing these new rules and this executive order by banning livestock use in a lot of cases, it clamped down again on being able to get your hands on medication if you need it through whatever means necessary. It's all by design, if you didn't figure that out. I don't know. If you ever needed something to trade, I would say that probably would be a good thing to keep on the shelf. In 2011, oh yeah, we read that already. All right, with livestock consuming the vast majority of antibiotics, and I mean, come on, who wants to eat beef that's loaded with not only antibiotics as a quote-unquote precaution, but also growth hormone? I mean, if you drink milk, make sure you don't have RBGH. And I'm trying to remember, I believe it was Monsanto who was the creator of that as well. It makes six-year-olds start growing boobs. So I don't see how good that is for anyone. And you wonder about why all these young kids are going into puberty at like 9? I'm going to tell you it's RGBH. Get it out of the milk. You know, we actually have dairies in upstate New York. There's a lot of local dairies around here. They're becoming farther and fewer between. But I mean, New York has been a big state for producing milk. And a lot of the dairies, the co-ops that we have around here, specifically say right on the front of the carton, does not use growth hormone, bovine growth hormone. I mean, if you're going to drink milk, which I can show you the data from RadNet, where they did testing in the milk, in the drinking water, in the rainwater, and in the air, that the milk has had plutonium in it. Not all of it, but there have been readings of plutonium and other radioactive materials in our milk since at least 1999. And with all the open air testing that we did up through the 1990s in the United States, we had fallout. It landed on the grass, the cows ate the grass, or the fields, the cows ate the crops, alfalfa or whatever they were feeding them. You better believe it was probably in the milk. So I don't drink milk. Not because of that, because I've never drank milk. I'm not a milk fan. I don't like the consistency. It's all gummy. And you know what? Why should we be drinking milk from some other species? We don't really need it if you get your vitamin D and calcium from other sources. With livestock consuming the vast majority of antibiotics, the bacteria found inside animals gradually develop resistance against the drugs, yes. And when they are not administered in strong enough doses, it means they also become much harder to treat in humans if and when the bacteria are transferred. I'm going to tell you something else. They have used that excuse to keep coming out with more and more or stronger and stronger antibiotics, these generation 2, 3, and 4 antibiotics. And the last few times I had to take them, they almost killed me. I'm one of those people that tends to be sensitive to drugs, especially. I found that out in the hospital when they gave me a spinal when I was giving birth, and all of a sudden we discovered that I was numb up to my nose and my lungs weren't working without me thinking about it. But some of those antibiotics, and I'm trying to think of what the one is that actually does damage to your Achilles tendon. Off the top of my head, I don't remember. But that caused major damage to my Achilles tendon. Then there was another one that they gave me that was like a generation four, and I don't remember what that one was called either. And that one made me so messed up. I felt like I was literally majorly intoxicated every time I took it. And I was so sick. So I said, well, screw it. I had no idea that those were side effects. So I would force myself to take it right before I went to bed. So then I wouldn't feel like throwing up and I wouldn't feel like I was drunk. And I did it for about a week until I couldn't deal with it anymore. And I finally called my doctor and she said, oh my God, you're having a major allergic reaction. Good thing you didn't have a stroke. So just be careful with any of that crap. So I can't even believe I just looked at the time and it's 10:47. We have 10 minutes left. So where do we go from here? Well, we went back. Let's go back and we'll look at this Melinda Gates thing. So Melinda Gates jumps on the bandwagon, attacking the anti-vaxxers. Vaxxers. While some American parents have been hesitant to vaccinate their children, women in developing worlds go to great lengths to get vaccinations, she added. Yeah, at gunpoint. They will walk 10 kilometers in the heat with their child and line up to get a vaccine because they've seen all the death. I wonder if they get them to read that 28-page document that gives them consent before they get their kid vaccinated. We have forgotten what a measles death looks like. We've forgotten the scourges that used to be. But in Africa, the women know the death that their children see, and they want their children to survive, said Gates. The philanthropist urged American families to take a think twice before putting off a vaccination. I mean, how ingenious is the whole Disney World ploy? And like I said last week, I really thought it was going to be a terrorist attack on Disney World. You know, thousands of children die with a bomb. No, it's even more ingenious. It's drop some measles on a doorknob or two in a bathroom and see what happens. Or put it on the bus of all the people coming over from places like in Southern California, where a large majority of the parents have said no to the experimental vaccines with who knows what in them. Melinda Gates says, quote, so I'd say to the people of the United States, we are incredibly lucky to have that technology, so we ought to take advantage of it, unquote. Oh, the woman makes you want to barf. You know, I'm going to tell you something. In college, all of us, any people that are my age, at least have gotten the measles vaccination. And when I was in college, I got sick and I got all these spots and I got these spots in my mouth and on my tongue and in my throat. And guess what? I caught the measles. Yeah, I did. And I'd been vaccinated. All right, right on the tails of Melinda Gates popping out of the woodwork. Oh, Billy, good old Billy Gates pops out too. Bill Gates and some other rich fuckers. It's all I can call them. I just get so angry when I see this because they are just manipulating everything. Bill Gates and other donors pledge a record amount of money to help vaccinate poor children. I actually loaded this page, and what do I see? A Johnson and Johnson advertisement off to the side. Yes, another one that is slated to make billions of dollars, especially with their billions of dollars in marketing we just saw. This is from AP. Governments and private donors, among them the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, have just pledged a record $7.5 billion to replenish a global vaccination program for the poor. The Gates Foundation gave $1.5 billion to the Public-Private Gavi Alliance, sorry, that has immunized hundreds of millions of children worldwide. Britain has pledged $1.57 billion. Norway gave $969 million. And the United States has pledged $800 million at a conference Tuesday in Berlin. Together with prior pledges, this provides the Gavi Alliance with a pot of $9.6 billion, slightly more than it requested for its work on vaccinations between 2016 and 2020. The Geneva-based organization said that the money would help immunize an additional 300 million children against preventable diseases, providing one of the most cost-effective ways to prevent millions of premature deaths. I mean, it is just when we look at how they utilize these poor countries, these poor overpopulated countries like Africa, like India. Remember all those Indian girls? India now has a class action lawsuit against the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for not giving proper consent for being guinea pigs for the Gardasil vaccine. Many of those children who have ended up now with all these weird disorders. And then in Africa with the Ebola, the first level testing on human Ebola vaccine tests that they've done, they provided those African mothers a 28-page document that they could read and then put a big X on it to give them their informed consent. What this is just giving them the golden key and financing to help motivate them with their Frankenstein science to keep using it on poor and uneducated people. And many of those poor and uneducated people live right here in the United States. Hey, lo and behold, Key West, Florida, you got the Chickamauga virus now, and Oxitec is going to release GMO mosquitoes. They're going to take care of it all. Guys, I found something. And actually, I found it a while ago, but I found a brand new document on it that I wanted to share with you. Good old DARPA again pops up like a whack-a-mole. I originally saw this back in August. The deadline to get on board with this is February 16th of 2015. DARPA forecasting the Chickamauga Challenge. Wow, isn't that just like the robotics challenge? Did you guys see that Atlas, that really scary robot that's going to become the future of RoboCop? Atlas has finally had his wires cut. He now is on battery power and has all of his pneumatics cut off. He's a standing, walking, mechanical machine that's on his own 2 feet. He's very frightening. Well, DARPA also now has forecast the Chickamauga Challenge. DARPA's been in the middle of a lot of the stuff for the vaccinations. Remember, Texas A&M is where they dumped a lot of money for that Blue Angel program for the universal flu vaccination, which was using RNAi technology, which has mutated and morphed into the stuff that they're using for the Ebola vaccine, some of them. You also will see that same technology being used in the 2014 statement of how Monsanto is protecting against insects. This is their new fight against drug, not drug, but I don't know what you'd even call it. Instead of BT corn, you're now going to have RNAi corn. We'll read about that if you want. I have a whole bunch of stuff on that. But here, before we run out of time, I got the last 3 minutes. DARPA seeks methods to accurately forecast the spread of the Chickamauga virus in the Caribbean, North, Central, and South America. This challenge has a special award structure with awards of $150,000 and $100,000 for the top two overall solvers, and four honorable mention awards of $50,000 each. In addition, top solvers in each methodology category. data robustness, applicability, presentation, and computation may win an additional 10 grand. The top six overall solvers will be invited to DARPA for the program's finale meeting, where they will participate in an interactive meeting to share best practices, collaborate, and facilitate continuing solver community cohesion. This is getting our kids, the colleges, to participate in this Frankenstein science, thinking that they're doing something great for the world to help solve all of these unsolvable problems. But they're making our kids participants in our ultimate demise. DARPA is not good in the end. This technology can all be used for good and evil, but it depends on who is pulling the strings. Artificial intelligence, cognitive computing is all very scary. And I got to tell you, Elon Musk, you know, he's been against AI. He's come out and spoken against it, as has Stephen Hawking. Elon Musk just put $10 million behind the fight to keep artificial intelligence friendly. That was a Forbes story from a couple days ago, but I couldn't even believe today I saw a story. Even the evil himself, good old Billy Gates, comes out in a BBC article from yesterday. Bill Gates insists also that AI is a threat. Humans should be worried, he said, about the threat posed by artificial intelligence. The Microsoft founder said that he did not understand people who were not troubled by the possibility that AI could grow too strong for people to control. During the Ask Me Anything question and answer that he just had on Reddit, Mr. Gates wrote, "I am in the camp that it is a concern about superintelligence. First, the machines will do a lot of job for us and not be super intelligent. That would be a positive if we manage it well. But a few decades after that, the intelligence is strong enough to be a concern." I agree with Elon Musk and others on this and don't understand why people are not concerned. That is from Bill Gates, people. All right, everybody have an awesome weekend. Here we go. Here comes the music. Make sure you stick around. It's Friday night. We have, at 6 o'clock tonight, live, Mr. Josh with Anti-Tyranny News. Anti-Media Radio with LaVon at 11. And in between, we got Dr. Simon, Truth on the Tracks on United Front Radio. All right, guys, I will catch up with you at some point. Have a beer for me. We'll talk to you Monday. Take care.